This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Fantastic to be back in Houston, sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, Carla and Jose behind the glass. Welcome in, everyone.
I didn't want to leave the ATL.
Yeah, you were rocking it in what you called Disneyland, which is Radio Row.
Oh, it was the best. Yeah. I don't know if Jose knows. Do you know I got a modeling contract out of the week?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, she did.
I'm not surprised.
Talking to it.
Let me ask this question. Let me frame it before you reveal. What do you think Carla's two best attributes are?
Okay, that's not fair.
I don't think I can answer that
thank
question.
Thank you, Jose.
I don't think I'm supposed to
naughty
answer that
boss,
question.
Naughty boss, honestly.
You were picked, selected, spotted, identified, recruited in to be a model of?
Hands.
Hands.
That's it.
Yes, you've got two
model.
Of them, and they're beautiful.
So
congratulations.
I'm going to be calling Lloyd's of London. I'm wearing gloves in the day now to protect the assets. But I was actually buying a Super Bowl hat for my husband and my daughter, and media guy came up to me and said, let me show you a picture, and I want to take your badge because I'm using your hand as a model for this picture. It's like, well, there we go. If I'm going to get a modeling contract, wouldn't you know, it would be my hands. But there we have it.
For those of you listening who have great visualization abilities, just think of it this way. Carla's hands are lovely. They're beautiful.
Locked and loaded.
You may see them in a magazine someday. The hard thing for Carla, though, you did something. Look, a lot of us think a lot about where we're going to watch the game, what food we're going to eat, how we're going to enjoy the game experience.
But you beat me on that.
I'm
going to say it.
Because this is, you want to disclose to the American public, Carla got stuck flying on a plane home during the game, and you watched the game on Southwest Airlines, did you not?
I did. Me and the peanuts.
You and the peanuts. What's the best Super Bowl food to watch during a game on an airplane?
There's not a choice. You get plain cookies, pretzels, or peanuts.
You can't order in pizza.
There is no ordering in.
Are the commercials all the same?
And I'm not going to tell you about the man next to me either.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. We
were there many people on the plane? I would think everyone...
Packed.
Really?
Because the flight before that got you home in time for the Super Bowl, they canceled the entire flight.
Oh, that
So everyone was on mine, and everyone was trying to look at my iPad because I had the game.
All right, we're going to unpack the big game. When we return, we're going to talk about Brady or Belichick. Which player, coach, is more important to the Patriots' success during this run? On the Boston Gloss, SB Nation Radio.
Birthdays, holidays, anniversaries, whatever the occasion is, Gifting Map has you covered. Visit giftingmap.com for great gifts. That's giftingmap.com, your map to great gifting. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I'm going to bring this up because it's been one of your sort of long-standing questions, and a great one. When you look at the pairing of Belichick and Brady and all they've accomplished, who deserves more of the credit? And you can frame it up a couple of different ways, but the way I like to think about it, well, you can frame it up one way is which one of them has made a bigger contribution to the Patriots. But another way to think about it is if the universe were different and they had never been paired, and say Brady had gone to Team B, whatever that would have been, and Belichick would have coached Team C, but neither of them would have ever gone to the Patriots, which one would be more likely to have won the Super Bowl? Tom Brady without Belichick or Belichick without Tom Brady?
I don't even hesitate. It's Belichick without Tom Brady.
Well, and the reason I'm asking the question is, of course, when you look at yesterday's game, it's going to fuel your argument.
And it's the same with, you know, when they started together in 2002, that first Super Bowl, it was kind of the same. Tom Brady did not have, and that was his first Super Bowl, so let's give him a break there. But it was the same. He played well enough not to hurt the team, but he did not particularly help them. And I don't know, that might be a little much to say that's what happened yesterday, but I do think he had a very non-Brady-like day.
Yep.
Not a typical Brady day. It's not even so much the numbers. It was just what was happening on the field that I saw the first pass that was intercepted. It was a terrible throw mechanically and not a good time. It just shouldn't have been thrown, and it was very un-Brady-like. And, you know, but what Brady does so well is he can then turn it on. When the game's on the line, I mean, in the fourth quarter, that drive with that beautiful pass to Gronkowski, that is Brady, the star, the elite Brady. But really, I think his poor play was the reason that the Rams, playing as badly as they were able to stay in the game until the very end.
Yeah, it is almost funny to think about it. Yes, if you base it just on yesterday, Belichick gets so much more of the credit for that victory. When we look at the scheme he created, I mean, everybody, it's just, you got to remember, it wasn't that long ago Sean McVay was unbeatable. He's the rocket scientist. He's the offensive wonder kind. Everyone wants to hire a coach who looks like Sean McVay. Who
they're doing it now.
Once shook Sean McVay's hand. Remember the, I think Cliff Kingsbury's ties, he once shook Sean McVay's hand back in seventh grade. They actually met. They had a conversation. So therefore,
there might have been some karmic exchange.
There might have been something there. That's how good Sean McVay was. But not against Bill Belichick. And so to give some credit where it's due, I'm sure this is now coming out into the public, but some of the things that Belichick did were just off the charts good. I mean, the easy one to describe is, of course, the Patriots are normally or have been playing man defense most of the last part of the season. And then yesterday, to switch things up on Goff, they went to zone. They would rush the passer with five or six guys, but it was never clear who was coming from where, and sometimes they'd show six and then only
clearly,
rush Goff three. And
was not sure where it was coming from. He looked very confused.
Goff was very confused. But the really intriguing thing that strikes me is that Goff and McVay had a rhythm. They had a plan. They did this against the Cowboys, and I remember watching this as a Cowboys fan, that they would go out to the line early. And, of course, coaches can talk into the headset of their quarterback up until 15 seconds before the snap. Mm-hmm. And McVay would tell Goff, look, based on that defense that's up there right now, let's do this, or look right, or look left. This is the play. We've got a chance. And he would give them direct instructions. Well, Belichick, knowing that, would show one defense. And then when the microphone would go off 15 seconds before the play, Patriots would show a different defense. And so what it did is it took McVay's voice out of the decision-making, and Goff was on his own.
And he wasn't ready for it.
Well,
he hasn't been doing that. It hasn't been his own decision. But you know what's interesting? So, yes, it is easy for me to say definitely Belichick after yesterday's game. But on the reverse, I want to say definitely Belichick based on last year's Super Bowl, which against the Eagles, which, of course, the Patriots lost. And I put that on Belichick. That Malcolm Butler unexplained benching that happened, you know, at the warmups without an explanation. Still, I don't think anyone on that team has received an explanation. And certainly the media and the public doesn't know. That cost them the Super Bowl. And Brady had a good game last year. He played well last year. So that's what tells me Belichick is the mover.
Yeah, I guess
how this team
your
goes.
Point's right, though. If we were just looking at last year's game, we'd give the nod to Brady over Belichick. That decision with Butler was certainly widely second-guessed.
But I'm saying how much Belichick, that it really
he's
is
the
him.
Swing.
He's
yeah.
the swing. That's
yeah.
exactly what I'm looking for. And I think that he's, the way that he is, the systems that he is able to run and the brilliance of his coaching, he reminds me of Nick Saban in so many ways. Their personalities, their press conferences, but neither of those coaches need an elite quarterback to be successful.
Hmm.
They both happen to have them.
Yes.
And, you know, Nick Saban as of recently, you know, Bill Belichick, I think, has developed Tom Brady into one, but that they are elite on their own without having to have an elite quarterback.
You know, it's funny to compare the Patriots' loss last year versus their victory this year. I actually think that the Rams, if you just look at the talent of this year's team, the Rams,
roster to roster,
and you compare that to the Eagles last year, the Rams are a better team than the Eagles. Of course, the Patriots lost to the Eagles, beat the Rams. It's just ironic how it's turned out. And we were noting, Craig Larson sent us this amazing story of a guy who placed a bet. Last year, he placed a $1 million wager on the Eagles, and he with a backup quarterback, and he got pay dirt. I think he thought that maybe Vegas was overvaluing Brady and Belichick, and he won big last year. This year, he put $1.5 million down on the Rams, and he's a little poorer today.
He would have been $18 million richer had it worked out.
Yeah. Well, think how emboldened you would be if you had won last year with the Eagles,
oh,
and then
sure.
now you've got a Rams team that's even better. And the Patriots arguably weren't any better than last year. I mean, everybody's
You're
at least a year.
Swole, I mean, after last year.
Brady's older, Edelman's older, Gronk's older, Gronk's going to retire.
And they didn't have a fantastic regular season.
Yeah. There were more questions this year. So I see why this guy put the money down.
Sure.
But anyway, he paid the price. The other funny thing I have to say as we sit here the day after this game is that it was, of course, announced really or leaked out weeks ago that defensive coordinator of the Patriots, Brian Flores, would go to become the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
They're looking so smart today.
And then the quarterback coach of the Los Angeles Rams, Zach Taylor, would go to become the head coach of the Bengals. And how are they looking today?
Well,
I mean, it's just ironic. How would you like to be the Bengals on this day after what happened to Goff yesterday to say to your fandom, hey, we're here to introduce to you Zach Taylor. He's the guy who coached up Jared Goff in the Super Bowl yesterday.
Ouch.
Yeah, not a good day. But on the other side, look at the Dolphins. I mean, they, you know, it's not a good day in that Cincinnati team. I mean, but look at the Dolphins. It's all smiles and grins. And of course, Brian Flores was introduced as a Super Bowl winning coach who's now come to take over the Dolphins.
And honestly, I can't fault the Bengals. When you look at the Rams, they're the second scoring offense, top scoring offense in the NFL, averaging 32.5 points a game. Who would think that any team, let alone the Patriots defense, which has not been highly ranked and you know, didn't inflict fear in anyone until yesterday, would hold them to basically 30 points below their season average. 3 points.
Yeah.
And Goff had, you know, one of the worst quarterback performances in Super Bowl history. Ay, ay, ay.
And then their quarterback coach is now the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. Anyway, that decision was made well long ago, and it was a great season. You can't take away a great season from Jared Goff and the Rams
offense.
And Goff was
part of the reason they were there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A big part of it.
No doubt. Okay. When we return, we're going to look at the Hall of Fame class. We got more NFL to discuss, more of the game. I want to look at that Hall of Fame class that was announced Saturday. Some really standout players and front office guys. When we return, you're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
Every day can't be hat day.
Take off your hat.
Stop worrying about your hairline today by visiting forhims.com/cheer. That's forhims.com/cheer. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
It is funny to be here in the studio. We've got about 9 television sets, monitors up on the screen. They're replaying the game. And just the lack of red zone opportunities. The fact that the Patriots had one red zone sequence and they scored on it, but the Rams...
A big, fat goose egg. Look, I can't even wrap my arms around that
I can't believe that they never made it to the red zone. I mean, that's a stat. That's a fact. That's something that I just don't accept. I'd almost have to watch the game again to believe it.
I know. It's so true. And I think, you know, I heard Jared Goff say, you know, I'm not going to say this is post-game. You know, we'll learn from this. He said, this is awful. Like, it's going to take us a while to get over that. And I think... When you can't get inside your opponent's 20, yes, it is awful. It's awful.
So there are a couple of theories out there about what happened to Todd Gurley. One is the scheme of the Patriots took it from that stretch to a different kind of slam bam, run up the middle.
Mm-hmm. Which is more suited for C.J. Anderson's style.
Yes, that stretch offense, the cutback run that Gurley does so well, wasn't going to work against the Patriots defense. That's one theory. The other is an injury. That he really wasn't healthy. He looked great against the Cowboys a couple weeks back. The other theory is he played so poorly against the Saints at the very, very beginning. He was benched. C.J. Anderson came in and played well, and it was a new rhythm to the offense, and C.J. deserved the carries. It's really hard to understand, and I don't think we've gotten a really straight answer yet.
No, and we may not for two reasons. Because Sean McVay is a no-excuse type guy,
yep,
and he's got his team's full attention and respect, And so guess what? That's a no-excuse locker room.
Right.
No way is Todd Gurley going to say, yeah, I'm not really 100%. Even if he is not, he's not going to say it. He's a team guy. I watched his post-game pressers and how he just emphasized, it's not me. I mean, we win as a team, we lose as a team. CJ was having good luck, and he talked about, you know, the AFC Championship game or NFC Championship game, where he said, I was terrible. Like, yeah, basically, I didn't play well. So, yeah, he's very accountable for what he's doing. He's very team first. But I really believe in my heart of hearts, he's not 100% with that knee.
Right.
The ACL knee that was injured coming out of Georgia.
Well, he may have tweaked it again, and maybe it's holding him back. They certainly gave him the ball and tried it. He had 10 carries for about 35 yards. Not a Todd Gurley day. Not in terms of, one, they would love to give him the ball more and be more successful. And then the yards per carry at 3.5 just isn't Todd Gurley-esque.
No, not at all. When you look at the numbers that he's put up, he has ended the NFL season the third most productive running back in the league behind Saquon Barkley, or Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley, I think in that order. And he missed the last few games of the season. So you see what a unbelievable force he was, and now all of a sudden he can't even get off the sideline. It's an injury.
All right, I want to shift gears to the Hall of Fame votes, but I first want to note one thing, Carla. If you hear only one thing from me tonight, I want you to know that when it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs some attention.
Oh, here we go. Yay.
Rally Auto Parts is everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty warm, from choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing windshield wiper blades. O'Reilly will help you get your car or truck in fighting shape for the cold winter months. That's O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Thank you for the hot tip.
Absolutely. All right, that Hall of Fame class, it's an elite group, pretty special group. Who stood out to you? Who were you really delighted to have join that group?
Ed Reed. I love that. He is beloved.
Mm-hmm.
He really is. And apparently, it took not even a nanosecond to decide that he was in.
Well, it's funny, all the information we're now, well, we have
Which
access to information.
By.
And there was a report that came out on how much time the members of the committee spent discussing each of the candidates who made it in. And the or didn't get in this in some cases, but in the case of Ed Reed, his was the shortest discussion. It was listed at 2 minutes. 2 minutes. It's as if somebody said, "Ed Reed, yeah, great safety, oh, outstanding." And then, of course, in any meeting of a lot of people, everybody wants to chime in something, right? There's always in a committee a voice or two or two. But to get it down to 2 minutes, it just shows how quickly and unanimously this guy deserved to be in the Hall. He will go down as one of the sort of the greatest center fielder type safeties to play in the NFL and to stand out.
He really defined the role.
Oh, yeah.
Of the safety to what it is today. Don't you think he's a pioneer in that way?
Brian Billick called him perhaps the smartest player who ever played for him, and there's a good long list of great players who played on the defensive side of the ball for Brian Billick.
Who was your favorite in this Hall of Fame class?
Well, as an old Cowboys fan and a guy who grew up in that Tom Landry, Tex Schramm era, I'm going to throw in Gil Brandt, who was part of that triumvirate. And Gil Brandt, of course, was a pioneer in player acquisition, player scouting. He's the guy who masterminded the great drafts of the 70s, really the 60s through the 1980, they had a 20-year winning record, 20 years of winning seasons.
That did you hear what you're saying?
Yeah, 20 years of winning seasons.
Woo! From 1960 to 1980.
Yeah.
That's so impressive.
Incredible. And you know, it's funny to look back on it because I remember back then people were saying things like, wow, Gil Brandt, he's so committed to doing things innovative in player scouting that he actually uses computers to develop and look at and understand who the good players are and develop a team. Well, now, of course, you wouldn't do anything without a computer, but he was a pioneer in all things, had some incredible picks. And probably the reason I'm a Cowboys fan was because Gil Brandt picked a running back out of Yale, Calvin Hill, to join the Cowboys. And my father was a Yale grad and really wanted to watch Calvin Hill play. And that was a reach. That was an extraordinary pick, to pick a Yale running back in the first round. And, of course, Calvin Hill went on to be a Rookie of the Year. So I'm happy with Gil Brandt as being the guy to come in from the Cowboys.
Well, that's fair. He's a star.
Is there anybody you wished had gotten in who didn't make it?
Yes, funny you ask.
Oh, dear.
But here's the good and the bad.
Okay.
This is the first year that this man, my fave, actually became a finalist. First year. But my Prince of Darkness, Tom Flores, once again denied entrance into the hall.
Yeah, no, he had an extraordinary record with the Raiders.
I mean, he really did. I mean, think about it. Look at these numbers with him for the Raiders. 83 wins during his seasons in Oakland.
Yep.
Second only to John Madden. He had an 8-3 record in the playoffs and 2 Super Bowl wins. Why is this guy not in here? He's 80 right now. I mean, I don't want to happen to him what happened to Kenny Stabler,
right,
which they get in, you know, after their death. He's the first Hispanic American to play in the NFL as a quarterback. And this is really cool. He's only one of 2 people in history. He joins Mike Ditka. Love that guy, too. To have Super Bowl rings as a player, as an assistant coach, and as the head coach. Player with the Chiefs, and then assistant coach and coach with Oakland. I really want him in there.
He resurrected the career of Jim Plunkett.
Yes, he did.
I mean, Plunkett was dead, right? Trophy winner out of Stanford. Failed with the Patriots.
Yes, he did.
But he got new life with Flores and the Raiders.
Won a Super Bowl and became the Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
So pretty impressive. But you have a reason why you think Tom is not in there.
Well, he did not do so well with the Seahawks. At least there's, I think, some whisper out there that his record with the Seahawks was not good. And remember back then, the Raiders were a team and Al Davis was the GM who seemingly could win every year, and they did for a long time. They had great success. This was back when Al Davis was considered a really good gift to the Raiders, like his final years.
And giving Tom Flores a chance to be a head coach as a Hispanic American,
yep,
that was cool.
Yep.
And Al Davis, that was his trademark, to give, you know, people a chance and minorities a chance, which was a really cool thing that he did.
Right.
But I'm hoping 2020 is his year. He made it to be a finalist, and he's 81 years young, so let's get moving.
Yeah, the clock's ticking on him. The other two guys who I just thought were slam dunk choices, Tony Gonzalez.
Absolutely.
The great tight end who played for the Falcons and the Chiefs. He's that first guy I might call a power forward style tight end, that big body, a guy who'd played basketball and football, and he just changed the game. He paved the way for other guys like Antonio Gates. I was a big fan of watching him on the field. And then Champ Bailey was a standout corner. I mean, he had 52 interceptions in his career.
Jeez.
And exceptional talent and had great seasons with the Redskins and the Broncos.
Well, you look at this class as a whole, 3 people that we've talked about today, Ed Reed, Tony Gonzalez, and Gil Brandt, were all pioneers
yep.
in their field. I
Slam
think that's
dunks.
Really, really cool. Yeah, that's great.
Here's an interesting stat. The Broncos have been around for, I think, about 59 years. And Bailey is their first defensive player to make the Hall of Fame.
I love, and the Broncos should be known for their defense. I love that.
Well, it's sort of interesting that there's been nobody else, and maybe Von Miller will get there.
He will. He'll get there.
He's probably the next guy up
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
when you think about the Broncos. Champ Bailey making it as an ex-Bronco. All right, one last little tidbit I really wanted to hit with this with you is the commercials yesterday. There were some good ones.
Oh.
Did you love the 100-year celebration?
Loved it.
I mean, it was really fun.
Those oh my gosh.
They did
and
it
Beast
in,
Mode starting it off was absolutely perfect.
In character. It was awesome.
It was. I thought that was one of the most. And you know what I kept thinking? They had to have so much freaking fun filming that.
Yes. You know what I read was, because of people's schedules and stuff, much of it was filmed independently and then all spliced together.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, if you put them all in the same room and just had that total chaos.
Oh, my gosh. It could have been unscripted.
Yeah.
I mean, no joke.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
No, I really love that. And they had a little bit of everything, all the different immaculate reception. And then, Joe Montana wouldn't throw it to Michael Irvin.
Was so
it was just
good.
Perfect.
I
he threw it to
that.
Jerry Rice. There were so many little nuances
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, that's great.
And I love the fumble. Yeah. It was just Ray Lewis going nuts when the ball hit the ground. They really mastered that one.
That was a winner, and it actually made Roger Goodell look good, don't you think?
Oh, you know, it's hard for you to convince me that he could ever look good. He's so boring, so commonplace.
I'm really trying to stick up for Roger.
I know.
He's got a hard job. Let's be real.
Well, you've got a hard job making me get excited about Roger Goodell.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I also love the first responders one with Anthony Lynn.
Yes.
That was a tearjerker.
Yeah, I love the Jason Bateman one.
That was great.
Really great. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Pat McAfee. He's a former punter for the Colts.
And he's, amongst many other things.
He's a very talented guy. We'll get Pat McAfee when we return on SB Nation Radio.
Birthdays, holidays, anniversaries. Whatever the occasion is, Gifting Map has you covered. Visit giftingmap.com for great gifts. That's giftingmap.com, your map to great gifting. This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Pat McAfee. He was a punter for the Colts years ago, but we were looking up his Wikipedia page, and it's sort of intriguing. I want to just say a couple things about you.
Two-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, two-time Pro Bowler. Very nice NFL career as a punter. But then he's gone on to do all these other things. He's at Barstool Sports. He's a stand-up comedian. He commentates on pro wrestling and in the NFL. And
College games.
We don't really.
I heard that.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, man. What a question. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the Wikipedia being accurate as well, because it's not always. I don't know. I just kind of – I have an entire list of things I'd like to accomplish and just try and kind of try out. I'm trying to see what fits me the best. I'm just enjoying the hell out of all of it, though, to be honest with you. I just show up and have a good time, and I think that's kind of carried me here, and we'll see how it goes. And hopefully I just end up in a nice spot at one day.
So he's shown up in a cool-looking tank top.
He's brought his guns.
Sleeveless hoodie.
He's got guns.
Guns that get through security, so I mean, that's a good.
The right kind of guns. I should have worn my tank top.
Well,
measured up and see what I had versus you.
I was gonna say you are a well put together man. I think it is something you can think. I could never wear what you're wearing right now.
I
don't know if I could breathe in it. B, I'm just a very comfortable person, and Buffalo Wild Wings put together this sleeveless hoodie for me, so I'm comfortable. I need to work out a little bit more. I mean, I'm not thinking so. I saw Schlereth. I appreciate it. That means a lot. But I saw Mark Schlereth over here, and he literally flexed on me. He outfitted on me and basically said that I need to work out. But it's just a fun time. Everybody's here. It's like a reunion of sorts every time you come down to Radio Row and get to see so many people. And honestly, I'm not sure how many people are coming here with sleeveless hoodies, and I feel pretty good about it.
I don't feel good. Carla, will you stop staring at him? Enough is enough. I know there's
a
good looking.
Hey, don't tell all my secrets. It's radio.
Enough is enough.
I respect it, Carla. I appreciate that. Beautiful group. Here as well.
I know a good thing when I see it. Okay, how do you feel about your Colts? Okay, I'm mad at them because they took out my Texans.
I understand.
But got to appreciate that talent. I mean, they go from worst in sacks in the league to first. So what happened?
I think a big thing has happened in the AFC South. Deshaun Watson's arrival in Houston has made the Houston Texans a legit contender all of a sudden out of nowhere.
I love that. Okay, we're going to be best friends.
So
forever.
Much winning in Houston. So much happening. J.J. Watt, obviously, Captain America down there. Jadeveon Clowney, that defense is incredible. I enjoy the fact that the Houston Texans have become a really good football team, strictly because every time we played down there, the Houston Texans fans showed up. I mean, we played down there Thursday night. Every time we played there, it was primetime game, and that place was the best place. It was NRG at one point. It's Reliant now. That place was electric, and I hope that the Texans can continue to be great at football because the fans deserve that. With that being said, it sucks for the Texans that Andrew Luck is healthy, and it seems as if there's a young core in Indianapolis that knows what they're doing. They're building a culture there behind Chris Ballard, who's a Houston native, I believe, by the way.
He has
a nice southern draw when you talk to him. Mm-hmm. I like the AFC South, how it's all coming together, but I do believe Houston and the Indianapolis Colts are on a collision course for like the next 5 years probably with Deshaun Watson and the young Colts team, and it's good for the AFC South. It's good for the game.
We're talking to Pat McAfee. He is a former punter for the Colts. Going back to the Colts, when we were looking at the drafts last year, we stacked ranked who had the best draft, and to pick up Darius Leonard and Quentin Nelson in the same draft, they clearly were the class of last year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people judged Chris Ballard when he pulled the trigger on Darius Leonard. I mean, Quentin Nelson was given nicknames by everybody in the NFL for being a mauler, a guy that demolishes people, best guard they've ever seen on film. So there wasn't a lot of questions. And he was at Notre Dame, which is in Indiana. So it seemed like the right fit. And Luck was coming back off of about 45 shoulder injuries. So it's like, hey, let's beef up the line a little bit. That Darius Leonard pool, though, out of South Carolina State has turned out to be – he's going to look like a genius for that for a long time. Bill Polian drafted Robert Mathis. Everybody judged him whenever he drafted Robert Mathis. Said he was too small, he was too this, he was too that. Robert Mathis goes on, probably going to be a Hall of Famer with Dwight Freeney. I think Darius Leonard is that same type of athlete. Nobody thought he was going to be good, and all he's done is led the NFL in tackles in his first season. I just hope he can continue to get better, and I'm excited to see him get next year. Chris Ballard, though.
Give him the props.
Good brain on that guy. Good brain on Chris Ballard building a good team in Indy.
Okay, and Brian Gain, do you know much about him, our GM in Houston?
I think so.
This will be his first big draft. He's got to make that move. You have got to protect the franchise. And I'm nervous about it. I'm very nervous about it.
I think it's so interesting because a team can go two different ways. I was on the tail end of my career with the Colts. We had a GM that was spend happy, right? He was every big free agent he wanted to bring in. But when you do that, you lose a culture of love for the team and through the city. That's why through the draft, Green Bay Packers go through the draft. You got a lot of the Patriots go through the draft, through their system. The team Steelers the same way. The teams that are normally perennial powerhouses are teams that build from within. And so drafts are so important. And that's Chris Ballard's agenda in Indy. I assume this is going to be his as well. You got to hit on draft picks. But if you miss on a couple, if you have a couple whiffs, I mean, that can really affect your next 10 years as a football team. And this is a big deal for him. I'm excited to see what everybody does. And the immediate reaction directly after draft night is the best in commentary in history. Nobody has a clue. They're trying to predict if somebody did terrible or not. Let's judge in like 3 years to see how the person pans out. But drafts are how you make and break your team, and I think everybody's pumped up about it.
We're talking to Pat McAfee. Of course, he was a punter for the Colts, has gone on to do many other things. Talk about your work with WWE.
Yeah, I've been a fan my whole life, right? I grew up in the Attitude Era. It was back whenever Stone Cold Steve Austin was flipping off everybody. The Rock was making his big up. DX, NWO, the whole thing, the Monday Night Wars. So I've been a fan since I was a kid, diehard fan since I was a kid. Michael Cole from the WWE had heard that I'm a fan. So he kind of set me up and asked me to come out and do a tryout with them with an NXT show. And it's just been on since then. I really appreciate and respect what they've done over there. And they've welcomed me into the family. So I just get to grab a microphone, be a full-blown idiot, and have a good time with it. And that's it's an absolute honor to make content with them.
And talk about your work as a stand-up comedian. What are you doing?
I love this. I can't wait to hear it.
So I'd never really consider myself a stand-up comedian, although I've been on stages and theaters, done 90-minute sets and things like that.
90 minutes.
Yeah, my first time up there, I went for 90 minutes. We recorded it. It's my special. I only have one special out, and it's my first time ever on a stage. Yeah, we rented a theater out. It was 1,800 seats. My Twitter followers bought the tickets in 6 seconds. We had to add
and you're Twitter king. I know. You got a good following.
My followers are good people, man. I respect and appreciate a lot in Houston, by the way. So I love the city of Houston, although I know the show's nationwide. But we sold out the theater in like 5-6 seconds. We had to add another show. We sold that out again, and then we filmed it. It was my special, and it was a real sink or swim moment. I mean, I was getting thrown out there to the wolves, and I loved it. I the reason why I never call myself a stand-up comedian is stand-up comedians do the same set like 5-6 times a week. It's the same weekend. I can't do that.
Just do you, however you're feeling.
Well, when I go up, it's like I have stories to tell. It's a celebration. We're going to have a nice night here. Let's take a mental vacation. And the beautiful thing about stand-up comedy is it's probably the only place on earth right now where you have a slew of humans, a community of people. Phones aren't allowed to be out. Nobody's talking. We're all kind of in the same thing together. And my favorite moment of stand-up comedy is when I'm a storyteller. When I tell a story and you can hear a pin drop in the theater in the middle of the story, it's like, all right, I got these people are with me right now. You know, like everybody's. And then obviously the huge pop is just, it's a really cool feeling. It was the most free I've ever felt in my entire life is when you walk on a stage with a microphone in front of a couple thousand people saying, make me laugh, monkey. So let's see how it goes. And it's a blast.
Isn't that the most free he's ever felt?
My
most terrified moment it would be for me, but remarkable. That's really cool.
Well, it's good. Yeah. And I started doing it whenever I was playing for the Colts. So yeah. I still was in the NFL. I was still getting a great paycheck. So honestly, my thoughts while walking on a stage were like, well, if this sucks. Yeah, if this sucks, it sucks. I'll just go kick a ball and I'll refund everybody their money. Right. And turned out we had a great night that night and we've done it ever since.
Okay, you're here on Radio Row. You're promoting something. Tell us what you're here to promote.
The sleeveless hoodie that I'm wearing that you commented about.
Oh,
he wants one. He's a little jealous.
Well, this was gifted to me by my friends at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
The Buffalo Wild Wings people are givers. That's what they are. They give out things. They give out happiness. They deliver great food. But if this game on Sunday, yesterday, if we air this on Monday, if this game, this Super Bowl, goes to overtime, Buffalo Wild Wings will be giving out free wings to everybody in America. On February 18th, they will have a time slot where everybody in America – no matter where you're from, no matter what you do, no matter how old you are, you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, you get some free wings because the Patriots and the Rams gifted us with more football. They went to overtime. Buffalo Wild Wings said, we'll give you some free wings. It's a beautiful thing, and I'm lucky to be here pitching it.
Awesome. Let's hope there's overtime.
Let's go. Let's hope.
There we go.
Let's go.
The only overtime Super Bowl was last year, so we're on a trend.
Two years ago, the Falcons, Patriots,
right.
It went to overtime.
Yeah. Tom Brady, Houston.
Tom Brady can do it. Tom Brady is the guy. If we need something to get to overtime, Tom Brady's the guy to do it. It's going to be a thriller. It's going to be dramatic. Let's just hope the people win in overtime, achieve the big dream of winning the Super Bowl, and everybody gets some free wings.
Pat McAfee, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I need to get that sweater.
I
need that hoodie.
Hey.
Since you're so open to all kinds of things, in case Brian Gain is looking for an offensive lineman, I'm looking at you. We could use you in Houston.
I'm nowhere near tough enough. The offensive line.
Oh, I beg to differ.
The hardest position in sports.
I know it is.
You get zero acknowledgement.
Not sexy. I know.
You get zero credibility. And all you do is hand-to-hand combat to make everybody else look better. The offensive lineman is the most selfless position. It's the most tough position in football. And I would never be able to pull it off. I was very lucky that I played in a position where I was a delicate flower and didn't get hit off.
Well, given all that he's done,
flower with some serious guns.
I just figured I didn't know what he was going to be when he's growing up. We know it will not be an offensive lineman.
That's the one thing we could definitely check off the list.
Very good. Great. Thanks so much for coming.
Come see you soon, Pat.
You got it. Thank you. Thank you.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So it really was hard. You were watching the game on a plane flying home. I mean, we began this hour with this. Now let's just tie it out. I mean, you didn't get great food. You didn't get to sit around with friends.
But I did leave the Super Bowl at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I was thinner than I would have been had I stayed at home. So there's a positive.
Yeah, you look lean today.
Don't you think? But, you know, unfortunately, the man next to me could not control his bodily functions, and he did not apologize for it. So that was a little
bit
rough.
What do you mean?
I'm not going into detail.
Oh, dear.
Just not going to
do it. You can't just drop that and then not tell us.
Well, I just don't even know how to describe it in nice terms.
He was tooting.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's move on.
And no apologizing.
You know, one of the other things...
And they were ones you could hear.
Oh, dear.
Not SBDs.
Oh, my gosh. Jose's going to have a sound of that, I'm sure, but that's another matter. Okay, so one of the other fun things that came out this week is the extraordinary dancing by some Patriots. There is a member of the Patriots team who can really, really dance.
That would be number 87.
The Gronk.
He's got the moves like Jagger.
I mean, he has the moves like Jagger. He ought to have a dance just named after him called the Gronk.
Well, he just might.
I mean... after what he did, and look, he danced well. There was that video that went around before the game and some sort of pre-week celebration event. He was dancing like a fiend. And then last night in the post-game celebration, he was outrageous. He was over the top. The whole team's rallying around him. This man moves. He reminds me of you sometimes. I've seen
well,
you at
right.
big events and discos and nightclubs and stuff.
It happens often. Me and Billy White Shoes Johnson breaking it down when we can.
Well, there were whispers after our interview on Radio Row with Billy White Shoes that you two would go off to the edge of Radio Row, maybe even front and center of Radio Row, and do the Billy White Shoes dance.
It's impressive.
Well, Billy White Shoes knew how to dance.
And I think he still knows how to dance.
Well, he looked great last week, and he looked like he could do a dance. I'm going to go with Gronk, Billy White Shoes, and then Tom Brady, a distant third. You know, over the years, there have been those video clips that have come out with Tom Brady dancing.
Yeah, you seem to know about those.
Yeah, they don't look right to me. I mean, it's not like Elaine on Seinfeld where she's really awkward, but he just doesn't seem fluid. He's not smooth. It's not dancing befitting of a guy who is coordinated, athletic, handsome, who has had girls around him all of his life, who ought to be just the center of the event. And he's not that when he dances.
Interesting. I'm going to have to check this out.
Now, go look up Tom Brady dancing.
So that's one thing maybe he doesn't do excellently?
It's about the only thing
right.
that he does not do well. It's really amazing. Pat McAfee, just to go back to him.
Great, great guest. I love talking to him.
Well, obviously it came out. We interviewed him back at Radio Row where at that moment he said, look, if the game goes into overtime, then there would be a big bounty of big surprise and gifts from Buffalo Wild Wings. Obviously the game did not go to overtime. But all else about that interview and the time with him was just a delight. Who would have thought that a punter in the NFL would be so comical, so quick-witted, so able to get behind a microphone and make a mark.
And let's say so big. I had no idea. And
you're
guess,
still talking about his guns, aren't you?
My goodness, it was the gun show.
Well, I noted that
he did have the Belichick-type sweatshirt, you know, the ripped-off sleeves, and so they were in full display. But he was great. And what I loved when I was teasing him at the end of the interview about he could be an O-lineman, I mean, he is a large guy.
Yeah.
And that the Texans, you know, that's what we need. I loved what he said. He said, oh, no, I could never do that, because he said that is a thankless job. You just go to head-to-head combat to make everybody else look good.
Boy.
The great description of an O-lineman.
Absolutely. The Patriots O-line was outstanding that postseason. The way they held up and kept Aaron Donald out of that backfield for most of the game, really a ton of credit to that Patriot offensive line. And think they had a left tackle, Trent Brown, who they basically got off the scrap heap, a trade with the 49ers. They let Nate Solder go. Solder went and signed a $15 million deal with the Giants.
No difference. No,
they bring in
no
Trent Brown. He's needed. Just as good. Now, Trent Brown's a free agent. Who's going to pay him $15 million, seeing what happened
possibly
to Solder?
Possibly the Texans.
Well,
they do. They have a lot of cap space. They might.
I know. And look, Trent Brown, based on the way he played for the Patriots, sure. Nate Solder, based on the way he played for the Patriots, sure, the Giants paid. But do you trust the player to be the same guy when he leaves that Patriot team?
That's the risk you take.
All right, hour two coming up. We're going to get to shift gears and talk a little. Well, we'll talk to Oliver Luck in the first part of next hour. Oliver Luck, who is the commissioner of the XFL, next hour on SB Nation Radio.